Welcome to another episode of the Capital Playbook. My name is Charles Williams. I am the owner and managing member of Pioneer Realty Capital. And today we're very pleased to be here at the CREF MBA conference here in San Diego, California. And we also have a very special guest, someone that's going to tell us a lot about credit unions and how credit unions work and why it is important in the commercial real estate industry. We have Mr. Luke Smith here with the CU Business Group. Mr. Smith, how are you today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good. You enjoying the show?
Very much so. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being a part of our show. We've had you guys, our representatives from your company, on our show before. Things have changed a little bit in terms of the economic environment.
Just a little bit.
So it's good to figure out, you know, from your perspective, what's going on, and maybe it provided some guidance, and especially for our audience who may be looking for loans or looking for ways to work with credit unions. But before we get into that detail, tell us a little bit about you. You have a very easy name to remember, Luke Smith.
Yeah.
And he was telling me that his father's name is John Smith.
Basic than that, right?
but tell me about Luke Smith. How did you get to where you are today with regards to your commercial real estate career?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks again for having me on the podcast. I started off in banking in college. I was 19 years old and worked for the collections department for First Tennessee Bank.
Okay.
And learned a lot of what not to do when lending money. Learned a lot of new names that you shouldn't call people, as a lot of bill collectors do. And from there, just worked my way up, honestly. Came through the retail side as a teller, as a branch manager, small business banking. And got into more of the commercial side and middle market. As my career continued to grow, shifted into the credit union space. And it's something I was always interested in. My parents are actually, John Smith, my dad, you were mentioning, and my mom both were board members of a local credit union. So I was always familiar with the credit union space. So started working for a competitor of ours, credit union service organization as a loan officer there. And that introduced me to the credit union space and specifically. And since then, just been able to grow my portfolio, grow my referral and broker network, and successfully done a lot of loans over the last several years in probably 38 states. And I feel like a good feel of the credit union space now, being in that segment for a long time. And it's a lot different than the bank side, as we'll talk about. But it feels like home. I really enjoy the credit union space a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, man, that's great. So 19. So you're about a freshman, sophomore in college.
Freshman, yeah.
Freshman in college.
Yep.
And you've been in banking ever since,
except for 1 year of retail, which was awful. Since I was 19, only 1 year of my life have I not been in banking in some capacity.
Oh, wow. So you've seen a lot of things happen. I mean, you look pretty young, but I think you're a little older than 19 now.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So I'll soon be 45.
Wow.
So I've been doing this a long time. And yeah, I've rode the roller coaster a lot,
yeah.
Like a lot of us have that have been in banking for even the last 10 years, let alone 20 plus years. So I've seen the ups, I've seen the downs, I've seen the good, I've seen the bad.
Wow. So now for many of us novice out here, when we see a credit union, to us, it seems very similar to a bank,
mm-hmm.
because there are a lot of similarities. The bank takes deposits.
Sure.
Credit union takes deposits.
Yeah.
If I need a loan for a house or for my boat or a car,
mm-hmm.
I can go to the bank or I can go to the credit union. But there are some distinct differences between a bank and a credit union.
Absolutely.
What are some of those differences?
So, I mean, the first thing, first of all, I want to go for a ride on your boat. So whenever you get that, let me know.
Okay.
The biggest thing is a bank is for profit. A credit union is not for profit.
Okay.
So when you put money in a checking account at a bank, that's it. They're a guardian. They're a guardian, a financial guardian for your funds. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a credit union, except when you become a member of a credit union, not client, member, you're a part owner of that credit union. It's a cooperative. Mm-hmm. So as a credit union at the end of the year, hopefully has made some money, but they're not for profit, right? So they give that money back. Who do they give that to? They give it to their owners. So the folks that have deposits with them are owners of that credit union, and they share in that revenue at the end of the year. So maybe it's 50 cents, maybe it's $500 that go back into your checking account from those profits that the credit union made. But that's the biggest difference between a bank and a credit union.
Wow. I can imagine that many people don't know that. So, you know, what would the advantages be from banking with a bank versus a credit union? Or I can think of some disadvantages. One, you mentioned you don't get that dividend, but
sure.
What are some of the, why would someone choose one over the other?
Well, depending on who you bank with, that money may not stay local, right? So you put money on deposit, and maybe that those funds are being used to lend in, you know, if you live in Tennessee, maybe that money's being lent in Minnesota or California or Arizona, whoever. And that's fine. Nothing against those states. But if that credit union is in your town or in your state, that money stays there. So that money is going back out into your community to help small business owners, you know, finance their companies, find that mom and pop shop where you go and get donuts every Saturday with the kids. Maybe that's going back to help them, you know, with a line of credit or start their business. They're committed to the community, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of financial literacy that credit unions do, and they're empowered to do from regulatory standpoint. They're pushed to do that. So they're in the schools, they're in low-income areas where they're trying to give back to the community, doing small, even $500 loans at low interest rates to help, you know, underserved communities. That's where you're going to see a lot of these credit union branches, is underserved communities. And there are certainly banks in those communities as well, but not as many as the credit unions have.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. Now, I know that banks are fall under the authority of the FDIC, mm-hmm. But credit unions are not under the authority of the FDIC. Does that give the credit union more leeway when it comes to certain lending products, maybe? They can lend on items that a bank can't lend on?
Not at all. So the FDIC is the regulatory institution for banks. Mm-hmm. The equivalent of that in the credit union space is the NCUA. They work just like the FDIC. So your deposit's insured for the same dollar amounts. Those type of regulations that you see on the bank side mirror the same thing on the credit union side. So the credit unions aren't able to offer anything that a bank cannot. That wouldn't be fair, right? So there's a lot of misconceptions out there, especially on the commercial side. You know, hey, you go, you know, you need a loan on cannabis or something that typically a bank wouldn't lend on. Well, go to a credit union. They'll do anything. Well, no, they won't.
Right.
That'd be great. But no, that's certainly not the case.
Yeah. And I think there is a little bit of miscommunication out there. I recently had a banker tell me that they had advised their client who was trying to buy a cannabis related business to go to a credit union because credit unions aren't FDIC insured,
right,
and don't fall under those regulations. And therefore, they're able to make these loans freely, and they're doing them all over the place. And I was like, really?
Yeah, no, that's a very niche market for banks and credit unions. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, in most states, there's only one or maybe two financial institutions that are allowed to lend and receive deposits and process deposits for any cannabis-related type business. Mm-hmm. Like in the state of Utah, there's only one institution, organization, and that's a credit union. So they bank all 13 pharmacies, as they call them, dispensaries, industries. They lend on the equipment, lend on the real estate, and also process their deposits. And that's a big undertaking. I mean, so cannabis industry is only cash.
Right.
So it's a process. And the institutions, the financial institutions and organizations that are banking the cannabis folks, they're hiring, 10, 20, 30 people just to handle that. It's quite the undertaking.
Wow. That's interesting. Where do you see cannabis lending and regulation going over the next 5 to 10 years, just from your perspective or vantage point?
I feel like, and certainly no expert, but I feel like the regulatory piece will follow the legality piece of it. So you're seeing more and more states where it's becoming regulationally allowed. Mm-hmm. I live in St. Louis, Missouri. Missouri, beginning of this month, it's now anyone can go to a dispensary and purchase cannabis. I think that the regulatory piece will follow that much slower because it's government. It has to do with the government. So it's not going to go fast, right? We all know that. But I think that will follow suit as time goes on.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Now, we talked about that since the last time we interviewed your colleague from CU Business Group, that the market has shifted a little bit.
Sure.
And it shifted in a variety of ways. I think the last time we talked to your colleague, we were still using, when we were pricing capital, we were using indexes such as prime, primarily the prime rate, what was the other rate?
5-year treasury.
LIBOR, the treasury. LIBOR, yeah. But now that's changed, right? Are you guys now, have y'all moved to SOFR?
No, I would say as a whole, the credit union space is using the treasuries.
Still using treasuries.
Yeah, so there's a lot of 5 and 7 year money. So they're basing that off the 5 and 7 year treasury with some type of margin on top of that. Mm-hmm. Over the last year, that margin certainly increased. As a year ago, everyone was fighting for loans, so those margins were getting skinny because they need to be competitive and beat out the other lender. With a volatile rate environments when it comes to interest rates, some influx in cap rates and therefore values, and then liquidity concerns with banks and credit unions right now, where they've been lending money like it's going out of style for the last several years. Well, now inflation's finally caught up with the consumers, and so there's less deposits.
Right.
So you're seeing, if we're going to lend out some of our liquidity, then we want a better margin. So rates have gone up, the margins have gone up, which has a huge trickle down effect, as we all know, in the commercial space.
Yeah. So now, do you see from a credit union perspective, assets that are perhaps more favorable than asset classes that are less favorable? What would the spectrum look like from less favorable to most favorable?
Sure. I think the major food groups are always going to be the most popular. Mm-hmm. The multifamily, medical office, self-storage, light industrial, those are always going to be big. I mean, certainly there's been a big retraction on the office side.
Right.
I think you'll see, I feel like you're going to see folks that have done heavy lift renovations before, office getting converted into multifamily or something else eventually. But multifamily wins it every day, like it has for decades, right?
Yeah.
So certainly I think that those are favorable. I think where the credit unions are most competitive from stabilized assets is going into secondary and tertiary markets, because they're all, one of the biggest things credit unions were established for was to help underserved markets,
right?
So being able to go to secondary and tertiary markets, due to regulations, and this is a little bit fundamental difference between banks and credit unions. Mm-hmm. If you're a federal credit union, you can't charge a prepay penalty.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of other credit unions that aren't federally, or FCU, a federally credit union, is that they will, it's like a soft prepay. So there's a lot of flexibility in the prepay.
Right? So you can't charge a prepay, can you charge an origination fee?
Yes, you can. Yeah. So if it's a federal credit union, which would be like, ABC Credit Union, it'll have FCU after it, they can't charge a prepay. So there's, that's very attractive to your borrowers and investors.
It's very attractive to me.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Especially in a rate environment where we're at.
Right.
If those rates start to come down, then you want to refi into cheaper debt, right?
Yeah.
So it's super attractive there. But
I think, I mean, it becomes to me like a very low cost bridge loan.
It can be, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Now, so there's certainly some federal credit unions out there that will charge you a 1% origination fee, but only charge you half of it up front. And charge the other half if you
pay it off early.
In a certain area of time.
Right.
And so keep that in mind. But if that's a half a point, that's still better than a 3% penalty.
2 points and a 1 point exit fee.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Now we're talking real bridge money. Yeah.
For now, sure. But you typically can't get a loan from a credit union on a asset that's pre-stabilization, right? Or can you?
It depends on the appetite of that credit union, okay, right? So you know, if you're in the middle of, you know, if it's, you know, a value add, mm-hmm, there's certainly credit out there that want to help with the value add piece of it. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's you know, when it comes to a pre-stabilized one, maybe there's an earnout, you know, component to mm-hmm the loan where we'll give you more money as it stabilizes and hit certain bogeys.
Gotcha. Interesting. So, now, with interest rates increasing and so forth, what impact have you seen this have on leverage?
A lot, especially on the retail, or I shouldn't say retail, the triple net aspect, asset class, excuse me. Big impact on that. I'm seeing down payments of 45 to 55% to make it cash flow, which shows you that there's still a lot of 1030, and oftentimes it's 1031 buyers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they don't want to pay those taxes.
Right.
They're willing to overpay, basically. You know, mm-hmm, we got probably a cap rate that's lower than it needs to be and debt yield, you know, sub 9, sub mm-hmm 8. So they're willing to overpay just to not pay those taxes. So mm-hmm that's been a huge impact there. And honestly, I mean, just, you know, there's been this gap of interest rates went up, but it didn't immediately affect values or cap rates. Mm. So there's kind of been that gap, and we're starting to see the values, you know, stabilize or maybe even go down a little bit. Even on multifamily, you're starting to see it normalize, get back to closer to a 95% occupancy instead of 99.9%,
right.
or whatever it may be. So we're starting to see more of that. So,
what are you seeing cap rates? Let's ask about just on multifamily. In general, what do LTVs look like on the credit union side?
Well, typically 75, sometimes 80%.
Okay.
We'll leverage on that. And cap rates are still in line. They've certainly gone up some.
Right.
Cost of debt's gone up. Been a little bit more vacancy, but not as bad.
Okay.
I feel like that's in line. I think it's still the retail side or triple net. I keep saying retail because that could be industrial or whatever, but the triple net piece, those cap rates in some markets still are, I think, a little lower than they could be.
Right. And there's still real high demand across the country for
that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we take for granted, you know, we have all these conveniences like Instacart and everyone delivers right to our home.
Absolutely.
You know, but there has to be, you know, they have to go pick that up from somewhere.
Right.
And the more convenient our lives become in terms of being able to get products on demand, the more warehousing space we're going to need. Is that a part of the market that credit unions are focused on? We know there's a high demand for housing and it's going to be there for a while.
Yep.
But would you say that the second most favorite asset class is that industrial, light industrial warehousing?
I don't know if it's second. It could be a third.
But okay.
It's definitely top three.
Okay.
And I think that just depends on the market as well. Mm-hmm. But light industrial, to your point, continues to come up the ladder of importance or popularity with lenders, especially in the credit union space. To your point, like even, you know, St. Louis. I mean, I remember just a few years ago, Amazon came in and they had two pre-built large warehouse spaces, and Amazon was negotiating one against the other to get the price down and then lease both of them. You know, I mean we're smack down in the middle of the U.S.
right?
It's a huge hub for Amazon.
Right.
But yeah, then they lease both, and I think you're going to see more and more of that from Amazon for sure.
Well, that's very interesting. So now let's talk about the typical profile of a credit union commercial real estate borrower. What does that person have to look like financially?
Sure.
What type of balance sheet? What type of track record would put a person in best shape to qualify for financing from a credit union?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So I think, you know, experience goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And so even if that borrower isn't putting all of their own funds down as the down payment, maybe they're bringing in equity from friends, family, mm-hmm. investors, whatever, right. they've got a track record of doing that as well. Mm-hmm. Balance sheet wise, I mean, you know, liquidity is king, you know, right. cash is king. So, right. You know, stronger that part of the balance sheet, the better. Mm-hmm. You know, a strong SREO, and even if it's a smaller one, but as long as it's cash flowing, because, mm-hmm. You know, like banks, credit unions are going to look at global cash flow. So, we want to see how that investor's entire portfolio is doing. Mm-hmm. That's a big piece. And I mean, certainly if an investor is showing outside income, not dependent on real estate, that's always great. And right. if they're not, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. But experience goes a long way, especially in that asset class. And obviously just tenure in doing it goes a long way.
Okay. Now, are there any asset classes that you find credit unions staying away from?
I would say that hospitality is tougher to place in the CU space. C-stores, gas stations are tougher to, and then obviously cannabis is very specific. but yeah, definitely the environmental concerns, the gas stations really are a big thing. And hospitality is just can fluctuate so much. Right. And especially right now with the fear of even a light recession, even our credit unions that are normally okay with hospitality mm-hmm. are not as aggressive with that right now as they mm-hmm. have been in the past.
Yeah. It's interesting because depending on who you talk to, you know, hospitality is still great. then some, you know, probably wisely are pulling away from it.
Yeah.
Because we are seeing a tightening when it comes to jobs, and not really just jobs, but also wages.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that are employed, but they're significantly underemployed.
For sure.
Especially when you see what's happening in the housing market. Now, if you were to predict from your perspective, what our economic outlook could look like over the next 5 and then maybe the next 10 years, what do you see things trending? We know we've had this. I would not have predicted. I knew interest rates had to go up. I didn't predict the velocity
sure.
in which they would go up. I mean, to me, and there are guys out there smarter than I am, I will admit that, but it seems a bit insane. You're going to fight inflation by raising the cost of capital.
Right.
Which, if you raise the cost of capital, then that means whatever you're putting the capital in becomes more expensive, i.e. your apartments or whatever.
Everything.
That increases your rent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what inflation is, right?
Yeah.
So obviously I don't understand the science behind that, but since we know what's happening now, if you were to predict where we're going over the next 5 years, what do you think will be maybe over the next 10 years? What do you see from your little crystal ball there?
Yeah, it's pretty murky. I'm kidding. I would say that 5 years, you know, I've been looking at it probably even a shorter time frame more mm-hmm. lately. Like, what's the next 12, 18, 24 months look like? Mm-hmm. I feel like by the end of the year, we'll see rates stabilize and potentially maybe come down a little bit, depending on, you know, if you listen to a lot of people that are smarter than me, you know, they say there will be a light recession, but you know, it won't be anything like we've seen more in the recent years. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as that stays true, then I think rates stabilize. Maybe they come down just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that we'll finally see some more stabilization, at least on the multifamily side. I don't know that the single family side will be there just yet. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, we'll a more normal piece of pricing when it comes to sales. You know, we're not going to see like the residential housing market. We're not going to see some crazy, inflated prices or costs for mm-hmm. those assets. I think 5 years down the road, man, it's hard to say. I'm no economist, but I think that, you know, there'll be another piece of the puzzle that'll be popular. I mean, I think triple net, especially on the light industrial side, will be popular this year and maybe mm-hmm. into next year. But I think it's all cyclical, as we all know. So mm-hmm. I think multifamily will always be there, and it'll peak a little more and come down. And there's a long-winded answer to say I'm not real sure.
Well, I don't think anybody on this planet is real sure
absolutely.
About what's going to happen But we certainly are in a dynamic environment. We live in interesting times, especially economically.
Yeah.
Which from my perspective, anytime you see an economic shift, especially that has such a major impact, there's always opportunity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's what we look for. There's going to be, you know, we talked about those assets that perhaps were over-levered when going into construction.
Right.
And, so there's going to be opportunities there. How does a credit union generally handle that? If you get into a situation, someone's in construction, they're over-levered. Now, maybe they've lost their bridge loan or they're outside of their banking covenants. Mm-hmm. Is there any type of rescue financing available generally through a credit union? Are those type of assets just don't fit credit union?
Yeah, no. I mean, so I think your lending pool for construction lending in the credit union space is very specific to the market they're in. Mm-hmm. For us, kind of background, so CU Business Group is a credit union service organization. So we do end-to-end commercial lending services for over 660 credit unions throughout the U.S. So we can originate the loan, we can help participate it out, we can underwrite it, we can process it, we can loan dock it, service it after the close, whatever we need to do for those credit unions, completely a la carte. So when it comes to construction lending, as we work with our 600 plus credit unions, what we've learned is, when it comes to construction, they want to go out their back door and be able to see it, or, 10, 20 minutes down the road and see it and touch it, feel it, it's right there.
Right.
When we do construction loan, it's very specific. It's very pointed. If we got a construction opportunity in San Antonio, then we're talking to credit unions in San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, where they're close by. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, there isn't a specific product for credit unions that's going to bail out a construction deal that's gotten sideways for whatever the reason it
is. Right, makes sense. I can see the value that your organization adds to the industry. Because, there may be a credit union in that market, but they may not have the ability to do the size loan that borrower needs. But you guys basically kind of syndicate, if you will. Would that be a good description?
Yeah, absolutely. We do that. We can originate, find those deals, or credit unions can come to us and say, hey, I got a $7 million opportunity, but I can only do $3 million of it. Can you find me participants that'll take $4 million? And we will do that.
And we will
process all that. We will coordinate that. And that's one of the unique things about the credit union space compared to the bank space that we were talking about earlier. Our company is owned by six different credit unions.
Mm.
So credit unions will go into business together, pool their resources to help other credit unions, whether it's in their area or in this case across the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago when we were founded, there were six corporate credit unions that said there's a need in the credit union space to, as credit unions are starting to get into the commercial aspect, is they need experts, they need help underwriting, setting policy, consulting, portfolio reviews, underwriting, all this. And so here comes CUBG, here comes CU Business Group. And we've been doing that for over 20 years now. And we're the largest and the oldest commercial services CUSO in the credit union space. And it's pretty remarkable when you think about, you think about banks, like no way they go in business together to help other banks, right? Because they're all, their stock, the stockholders shareholders aren't going to have anything to do with that, right?
Right.
Well, we don't have to worry about that in the credit union space, right? So it's an interesting dynamic, but it's also a lot of fun.
Well, very, very interesting dynamic, as you said, to play on your words. CU Business Group. I tell you what, you guys add a lot of value to the commercial real estate industry. I'm very happy that you took the time.
Thank you.
Away from the CREP MBA conference here in San Diego to come and sit with us to give us some education about credit unions, how they work, and more specifically, how CU Business Group plays a role in that. So if you have a loan scenario that you want to present, we're going to make sure that we make Luke's information available on the screen. So you'll be able to call him or email him, and I'm certain you'll be more than happy to help them out.
More than happy. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. Luke, thank you so much for being on our show.
Appreciate it.
And we look forward to having you again, maybe next year at the CREF conference.
Absolutely.
Or some other time. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.